It's always good at the end of a day like this where people observed and people conducted themselves in their own way and they went about their way and their day in their own fashion of what was fit their schedule and their own demands and the best of their ability to focus their mind on the importance and the weight of the day and to come together as a tzibur, to reflect together, to share a message together, and as a unifying idea of Divrei Torah, to kind of leave this day with all of its sorrow and its depth and its pain and turn towards the light and turn towards the second half of the message of the day as the day comes to a close. The Shaar HaKavanos, Reb Chaim Vital, the Talmud of the Arizal, quotes his Rebbe asking why we only recited Nachem just a few minutes ago at Mincha. Why didn't we recite Nachem and ask for the Nacham and the comfort of Yerushalayim and the Beis HaMikdash during Shachris? So he quotes his Rebbe, the Arizal, who said that starting from Mincha and Tisha B'Av, Mashiach is born. We have such an idea in the Yerushalmi and Brachos that Mashiach, the actual Mashiach, is born at the Mincha and Tisha B'Av. And because of this idea, and his name is Menachem, as we have a tradition, and because of these ideas together, it makes sense that at the Mincha, where the pivot has already turned towards the form of Nechama, and the light is, so to speak, at the end of the tunnel, that is the moment where we begin to reflect on Nechama, not in the morning, where we're still dealing with the pain of the destruction and the responsibility of the Chorban, but at this moment we turn towards the idea of Menachem and the birth of Mashiach on the afternoon of Tisha B'Av. There's a Rambam at the very, very end of Hilchos Tanyos in Parakeh. The Rambam goes against the grain, where the Rambam says, generally against his style of only quoting halacha and strict practical ideas, the Rambam says, Kol hatzomos ha'elu asidim livatzel limos ha-mashiach. All of the fast days, most importantly, including this day of Tisha B'Av, is going to stop in the days of Mashiach. V'lo od el shehem asidim liyos yom tov v'yimei sasun v'simcha. But not only will days cease to be days of fasting, they will become days of yantif, days of rejoicing. Shne'amar, ko'amar, Hashem tzvakos, tzom revi, tzom chamish, tzom ashri, tzom asiri, all of the four fast days dealing with galus and destruction, yele beis Yehuda, will become for the house of Yehuda, l'sasun, l'simcha, l'moadim tobim, for days of rejoicing and good tidings, v'emes v'shal ma'avo, days of peace and love and truth and brotherly love. This is how the Rambam ends Hilchos Tanyos. This is not a halachic statement. The Rambam is a book of halacha, and I know that this is a question that is often asked on a Rambam, and the Rambam brings something that is al pi musar and machshava. You would think that he does it so many times that it's not a rule anymore that he only quotes halacha, but let's just go with the flow. What?
But, Mashiach comes.
So even so, you'll know that it's you'll know to make a simcha. I'm saying you'll know all the other days of Yontif. You'll know what it'll be. So the Rambam, this is the point of the Rambam, where he says that it'll be a day, it'll be a happy time. So the Lubavitch Rebbe says on this point, he says, not just a nice idea that will be a Yontif Mashiach comes, but just like it was kavua, it was established within these days on the calendar, that they are days of mourning and sadness, it was also kovea. It was established within the fabric of the day that these are days of Simcha and Yontif. We just can't appreciate or see at this point, but no different than Chazal where Gozer Gzeira, like any other Takana, any other rabbinic law, so too within the Takana of the Nevi'im of these days is established a day of Simcha and Yontif. But it just takes the right time and the right place to experience that. The Birkei Yosef cites a fascinating Kobo. The Kobo cites a Minog already in his generation where he said that the women on the afternoon of Tisha B'Av would go bathe on this day. And the Kolbo asks, how could that be? And the Birkei Yosef explains that there's a halacha to remember the Chorban, there's a halacha to remember the Avelus, but there's also a mitzvah to remember the Geula and the Nechama as well. It's also our responsibility to not give up and to always see the positive and always see what can be around the corner. And therefore, they established a minhag, or a minhag came to be, that they would get up from their nechama and go bathe as a sign of the expectations that nechama and calm and peace and shalom would come to the Jewish people. Rav Pinchas of Karitz, Nimrei Pinchas, said, why do we call these days a moed? We know we didn't say tachanun today because it's a moed. So he explained, because this is the day when Mashiach ben David will be born, and therefore that's why it's ikrei moed, and it's called a moed. Listen to the bold statement of the Aruch HaShulchan regarding these halachos. He says, ein omrim tachanun b'mincha b'erev Tisha B'Av. We don't say tachanun on the mincha before Tisha B'Av. Mishum d'ikre moed, because it's called a moed. We also did not say tzidkascha at the mincha Shabbos of Erev Tisha B'Av. V'gam b'Tisha B'Av atzmo, and also in Tisha B'Av itself, we don't say tachanun. Listen to these words. V'chein v'ha'inyon, hu l'simen ki anu muvtachim, because we are confident. We have such confidence in the goodness of Hashem that He'll bring the Mashiach. It is a declaration of our emuna. By not saying tachan, it is not just that the day is long, we don't want to say tachan, or somewhere off there's a happiness to this day. It's a fulfillment of emuna in the Mashiach that we don't say tachan to show how much we believe in the coming of Mashiach. So says the Aruch HaShulchan. There's a well-known drush of the Chassam Sofer in the Drushos in Chelek Gimel, where he says, from the fact that we continue to mourn for so many years after the Korban, shows that we haven't given up. And we know that there's a gzeira min hashamayim. The way the world works, the natural order of the world is that after 12 months, the mourning, the feeling of loss over someone, goes away, because Hashem made it that we shouldn't experience pain forever and ever and ever. This is the famous idea of the Chassam Sofer. If you have an Obar year, you have a leap year, you should have Kavana when you read Parshas Zachar, not before Purim, to have in mind that you fulfill the mitzvah, because 12 months you're not going to remember anymore, and therefore you have to do it by the 13th month. This is the famous idea the Chassam Sofer establishes. But he says, if we don't accept Nechama, it means that we know that our hope is still alive. The fact that we sit here 2,000 years after the fact, and we continue to sit on the floor, and we continue to say the kinos, and we continue to wear the clothing we wear, and we continue to conduct ourselves in all the halachos of the 9 days and 3 weeks, establishes a reality that we do not have pure nechama, because we know that there is still hope. If we thought that everything was dead and gone, and there was no reason to hope and to yearn and to try to have a better world, and to live in a day where there won't be any tzaros and any sfeikos, and everything would be clear, then we would have walked away, and we would have moved on to something else. But because we go back to it, it's a sign that there is still hope, and that the Beis HaMikdash is still alive. And this is the famous idea of Rashi by Yaakov Avinu, that Yaakov Avinu was never comforted by the apparent death or loss of Yosef, because Yosef in reality was still very much there. And therefore Yaakov, he couldn't explain it, and he didn't know why, but he couldn't get over the fact he couldn't move on after the loss of his son. Not that anyone should be able to technically move on by such a tragedy, but nevertheless, the natural occurrence of getting over and becoming less anguished and the pain not being so raw was always with Yaakov during those years. Why, says Rashi, as the Chassam Sofer points out again here? Because he knew deep down inside that Yosef was still there. And as long as that thing you're longing for is still there, then the pain doesn't go away. And this touches on the famous story, whether it's true or not, it is still a beautiful idea about Napoleon coming in during his campaign, seeing Jews sitting on the floor on Tisha B'Av, asking, what's with these people sitting on the floor crying? And they explain to Napoleon, because their temple was destroyed 1,700 years ago, and Napoleon said that if they sit here and continue to mourn and the loss and destruction of the temple, then it must be that they will see its rebuilding in there at some point in a speedy future ahead of them. Again, is the story true? Maybe, maybe not, but it certainly reflects the idea of the Chassam Sofer. Napoleon was mechavin to the Chassam Sofer, and he had the same idea, whatever the story may be. We know the story at the end of Makkos, Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Akiva went up to Yerushalayim. They reached Mount Scopus, and they tore their garments, and they saw the Chorban, and they got to Har Abayis. They saw a fox emerging from the ruins, from the Kodesh HaKodeshim, and they began to weep, and Rabbi Akiva began to laugh. And they turned to Rabbi Akiva, and they said, why are you laughing? And Rabbi Akiva looked at them and said, why are you crying? So they said, what do you mean? Look, the Chorban, fox's desecration, is the holiest place in the world. How could you not cry over seeing such a terrible thing? So Rabbi Akiva told them, as we know, that I see a comparison between the Nevuah of Uriah cited in Micha and Zechariah, where on one hand we are told that there will be destruction and terrible things that will be plowed over. Lachem biglalchem Tzion tzadet techaresh, the ground will be plowed over by Tzion. And Zechariah tells us as well that old men and women shall sit in the streets of Yerushalayim. And now that I know that the Nevuah of Uriah has come true, I must know now that the Nevuah of Zechariah will come true as well. Ask the Lubavitch Rebbe in two places in the Sichos, out of all the psukim of the Chorban, why does this pasuk of Lachem Biglalchem Tzion Tzadet Techaresh, Why is that the pasuk that speaks to Rabbi Akiva the most? Why is that the pasuk that jumps out at him, that Sion will be plowed over, destroyed, and plowed over, the mountain will be brought down to nothing? So he explains as follows. There are two messages in the pasuk of Sion Sada Techaresh, that Sion will be plowed over. The first is the destruction, the loss of the Churban, the Beis HaMikdash, Yerushalayim. That's the most obvious thing. But there's another idea. We know when it comes to Hilchos Shabbos, and this is discussion in the Mishnah by the Malachos in the Mishnah in Shabbos, that with their Mishnah, the Mishnah seems to mix up the order of Zriya and Charisha. You would think, says the Gemara, that first you plow and then you plant, and then the Mishnah has planting and then plowing, and it has a whole discussion there about what should go first, the planting or the plowing. So says the Lubavitch Rebbe, before something grows, it must be plowed first. Rabbi Akiva sees the pasuk of Tzion Sadeh Techaresh, sees the pasuk of Tzion being plowed over, and doesn't only see destruction, but he sees plowing that leads to planting. Techaresh Charisha is a plowing that doesn't just lay dormant and nothing comes from it. You plow, but deep beneath that plowing is something that will sprout and something that will come forth. And therefore, the very nevuah of total calamity and destruction of the Jewish people is the same nevuah that gives hope to Rabbi Akiva. Because unless there is first a charisha, a plowing, then we will not merit to see old men and women in the streets of Yerushalayim. Rav Avram Tzvi Kluger, who is a well-known mashpia in Eretz Yisrael, writes in his Machon L'Shivtecha a beautiful explanation as to why we break the glass at a chuppah. We break the glass two places at a wedding. We break it by the bedekin. Before the bedekin, we break it by the chuppah. We break it in both places because it used to be that both events were separate in Jewish history, and that's why we had two breakings of the glass, remember the Churban, in two different areas, but over time we mushed both events together, so we do two, one before the Bedekin and one by the Chuppah. So he says, what is this reference? Why do we do this by Chassan and Kala right before they're about to be married, they're leaving the Chuppah? What are we trying to leave them? What's the message for Chassan and Kala at that moment in time? So he notes that we find the breaking of silverware, the breaking of vessels, in another place in Tanakh, and that is by Yirmiyahu HaNavi. Twice Yirmiyahu HaNavi is told to go meet a piece of pottery. One time is the one we're more familiar with, that's the message of tshuva that we talk about in Rosh Hashanah, that we are like a pottery in the hands of the potter's wheel, and that's that message of tshuva and redemption, the possibility to reform yourself and build. But later on, in Perek Yud-Tes of Yirmiyahu's Nevuahs, at a certain point, the piece of pottery has become firm. It no longer can be bendable, it's no longer malleable, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Yirmiyahu to go and take the piece of pottery and smash it and break it, which is meant to be a message of finality, that there's really no more option, the Churban is coming, and there's no more place for the Jewish people to hide and run. This is really the end of the line, the end of the story. So Avraham Tzvi Kluger explains that something else comes with destruction. When a person is broken down, when a person reaches the end of the line, they have nowhere to go, they have reached rock bottom, when a person goes through struggles in life and has to overcome and feels like they're broken, very often that is the place where their greatest potential lies. When a person is in a situation where they don't think they can get out of it, they don't see how they're going to be successful, right then and there, deep inside of them, they find something they didn't know they had. They find a light, they find an ability, they find an amuna, an ability to daven, an ability to learn they didn't know they were able to access, and it comes out. Very often with destruction inside, something comes out of it. Light is found in that darkness, that difficulty, and it bursts forth when people deal with difficulties in life. And only when there's a shvira, a breaking of the glass, can we see what we're made of. And so too Klal Yisrael. Without Churban, as necessary as it may be, even though we may not have wanted it, without Churban, we may not have been to access many of the abilities we have as a people. And all great things in Jewish history happened after shvira and Churban. We got the Torah after Shibud Mitzrayim. We accepted the Torah with Ahava after the events of Purim. after Chorban Bayis Rishon. The Mishnah and the Talmud Bavli were written after the Chorban of the second Beis HaMikdash. After the expulsion of, after the Crusades rise up, and during the Crusades rise the Bali Atosos and Rashi and that house of Jewish learning. After the expulsion from Spain comes the Beis Yosef, the Shulchan Aruch, and all those important things. We find that when there is terrible tragedy and terrible difficulty in Jewish history, comes amazing things afterwards. Most strikingly, in a generation before, the State of Israel, after the Holocaust. The most biggest lights, the things that give us such chizuk, come from the darkest places. And that is the nature of the world. When there is shvira, when there is breaking, there comes right after it things that can power us and push us into the future to accomplish more than we thought we could accomplish beforehand. And he notes, this is why we juxtaposed this morning in the kinos, Bitseisi mi Mitzrayim, Bitseisi mi Yerushalayim. Just like when we left Mitzrayim, we grew and accomplished amazing things, so too in Gullus, when we left Yerushalayim, we were able to see and reach inside and to find kochos inside the Jewish people and emunah and strength that we may not have known were there before. And this is reflecting the idea of Makom Shebaal Tshuva Omdim, a Baal Tshuva can access places perhaps he didn't know he was able to see beforehand. And with this, he says, it makes sense why Yirmiyahu was told to go break the glass. It's true the breaking of the pottery by Yirmiyahu's hand represented the ultimate destruction and no turning back, and that Nebuchadnezzar and his armies were on the way. But it also represented a message to the Jewish people. As you go into Gullus, you're going to see things, you're going to find things about yourself, you're going to see things you didn't know you were capable of that came through difficulty and hardship and struggle that you may not have seen inside of you beforehand. And therefore, says Rav Avraham Tzvi Kluger, this is the message to Chasan and Kal as they begin their marriage. Every marriage between two people is going to have difficulties. Two people from different homes, different backgrounds, different families, there's going to be conflict, struggle, there's going to be a little bit of breaking, a little bit of shvira in the beginning of that relationship. And there might be difficulties over the course of the marriage. But do you know what comes through that shvira, that breaking? Amazing, beautiful things. A beautiful marriage, a strong marriage, light and potential and amunah and character traits you didn't know you had inside of you come through breaking. And therefore we break the glass right at that moment where they leave the chuppah to start their marriage together and to go to the cheder yichud to tell them this shvira, this breaking does not mean the end of the line. It doesn't mean that there's no hope. It means that there's a lot more to accomplish, that there's light, there's beauty, and there's so many things that you can build together. I just want to end with a beautiful drasha from Rabbi Soloveitchik. He gave this in Yiddish at the Yahrzeit Shir of his father in YU in 1957. This was translated into English in Rabbi Rakefet's work on the Rav. Just, I'm going to read for it word for word. Just listen at this beautiful idea. Just to understand beforehand, a major theme that Rabbi Soloveitchik returns to again and again is the idea of v'halachta bidrachav, that we mimic Hashem, we turn to Hashem to see how to act ourselves. Listen to this amazing idea. The Medrash relates that Hashem created and destroyed many worlds before he allowed this world to remain in existence. This is the Medrash Rabbah in Brachos. Some of the earlier worlds were even more beautiful than the present one, but the Creator eliminated them. He went ahead and created this world, which has endured. What are the rabbis teaching us? What does it mean that God created and destroyed worlds? After all, he could have made this world to begin with, so why did God experiment with earlier creations? Hashem couldn't get it right the first time. He had to, a few do-overs, a few mulligans to make sure he got the world right. This medrash conveys a very important concept to us. A person must know how to continue building and creating in life, even if his previous efforts are demolished. He cannot lose hope and must not give up. He must go ahead and build again. Perhaps the new world created will not be as beautiful as the earlier one. Nevertheless, he must continue to rebuild. Hashem was able to say about his final world, "V'hine tov ma'od." That is, the final permanent world is very good. Even though some of the earlier ones may have been even more beautiful, they are gone, and we must maximize what we have now. Beautiful or most beautiful doesn't always mean the best. Plan B can turn out to be even greater than Plan A. Today we must judge the Torah world we are reconstructing after the Holocaust as very good, tov ma'od. Even though earlier ones may have been more beautiful. I'm very proud of the Maimonides Day School in Boston. Many times I test the students on Chumash and Rashi that they're studying. I'm impressed by their knowledge and inspired by their achievements. Then I ask myself, why am I so excited by such small accomplishments? After all, I saw the giants of European Torah Jewry before the Holocaust. I discussed Gemara with my grandfather, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik of Brisk. I visited Rav Chaim Ozer Grzesinski in Vilna. I debated with Rav Shimon Shkup concerning the explanation of certain pieces in the Gemara. I spent entire nights learning with Rav Baruch Ber Leibowitz, the Rosh Yeshiva of Kamenetz, attempting to comprehend difficult rulings in the Mishnah Torah. Why am I so impressed that American kids can master a little Chumash with Rashi, the rudiments of Torah study? This is the message of recreation of destroyed worlds. As a Jew has to know how to emulate Hashem, and like Hashem, to continue to create even after his former world has been eradicated. True, what I have in Boston may not be as beautiful as the European Torah world before the Holocaust. Nevertheless, it is the world we have now. We have to continue to build it and not look back. We must not be cynical, and we should direct our attention and efforts to the future. We must look ahead. I can think of no greater and more perfect idea to leave Tisha B'Av with going into the rest of the summer, heading towards Elul and Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur and Sukkot, that whatever we have now is what we have. Whatever we've accomplished is what we have accomplished in our pocket, and we need to continue to work with it, to not worry about what mistakes were made in the past, what we didn't accomplish beforehand, what grand plans I had to do or I didn't do. We have now is Tov Ma'od, and just like a Kadosh Baruch Hu is Machriv Olamos, he destroys worlds and builds again, the message for us is as well to pick up and to continue. We leave Tisha B'Av a time of Chorban, and as Rav Avraham Tzvi Kluger said, from Shvira comes breaking, comes tremendous growth and tremendous potential we didn't know we had beforehand. As the Chassam Sofer told us, as we continue to think about Yerushalayim, it is a sign that Yerushalayim is still very much there. And as the Arizal said, and the Rambam taught, and the Lubav Trebi said, through Charisha and plowing over comes planting and building. And that should be a message for us as we continue into the rest of Av, into Elul, to understand that things may have not gone as we planned, but to pick up the pieces, to try a little bit harder, to try a little bit better, and to see that light at the end of the tunnel, to understand that Sion, Spesada Techaresh, that through that plowing comes amazing planting.